Are you a pre-medical student trying to figure out how to apply for medical school? Well, in this week's episode with the amazing Dr. Shakira Sanchez Collins, not only do we tackle her journey to medicine and beyond, but we also share three key tips for helping those students who are applying to medical school. We also share for residents what you need to be familiar with and ready for as you make that transition, or if you're already transitioned into your intern year. We have so much more to unpack, like her experiences as a college student and her major choice, as well as her experiences as a medical student. We're so excited to have Dr. Shakira Sanchez Collins with us, a primary care physician and integrative medicine physician at Northwestern. And let's jump right into the episode. Roll the music. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Black Med Connect podcast, affectionately known as the BMed podcast, where we share inspiring stories of Black physicians and physicians in training. I am so, so excited because this evening I have an amazing guest with me by the name of Dr. Shakira Sanchez Collins. She's a dear friend and a wonderful, wonderful person. She is currently practicing primary care and integrative medicine at Northwestern. So we are so, so delighted to have you here with us. Welcome to the BMed podcast.
Thank you, Jasmine, for inviting me to this wonderful podcast. I'm so excited about being able to share my own personal medical journey from college student all the way up to becoming an attending physician. And so I am ready. Let's go, Jasmine.
All right, let's jump right in. So you already started to allude to it. So did you know prior to college that you wanted to be a doctor, or when did you finally say, you know what, this is the career path that I want to take?
So I went to this career fair back in high school, and I met this young Black female family medicine resident. And I somehow wanted to find more about the role of being a physician. So I asked to shadow her. She agreed, thank God. And so I spent the whole day literally following her and just seeing how she interacted with different patients and just the whole experience of what it meant to be a physician in general, but also particularly a physician in the outpatient setting. So from there, that is when I began to have an increased interest. And then from there is when I decided to pursue medicine.
Awesome. Awesome. I love how, you know, shout out to those people who are willing to let us shadow and just kind of take us under their wing. I feel like without those people, our career trajectories may even be different. So it sounds like you had a very cool shadowing experience. I'll shout out Dr. Edwards, my high school physician. I got the shadow. He might be listening. So, so it sounds like you had your shadowing experience. And then tell us a little bit more. How did you kind of navigate that path in college and on to medical school?
So when I went to college, I actually thought I was going to major in, there was a specialty called molecular biophysics and biochemistry. Oh. I thought that, you know, I love science, I love math. But when I got to college, I realized that I had other interests. And, you know, you realize that you only get so much exposure to subjects at the high school level. So when you actually get to the college level, your mind is open and you're exposed to so many other different subjects. And so I actually wind up doing my pre-med requirements while also majoring in religious studies. And so that itself allowed me to get a lot of humanities classes. And I had a lot of friends that did similar things. I had friends who majored in history of science, history of medicine, or art. People were doing other specialties. So it was definitely a mix of people to experience that with. And I look back, I'm so glad I did that because I came into college with, you know, decent writing skills, obviously. Mm-hmm. However, by majoring in humanities, it really allowed me to focus on things that someone had thought were my weaknesses in high school. I was that math science nerd. So when I got to college, mm-hmm. I majored in humanities. I feel like I finally learned how to really write well. And that really shaped my experience. So from undergrad, having done my pre-med requirements, I actually did not take the MCAT when I was an undergrad. Well, I wasn't about to go to medical school immediately. Instead, I wind up answering my call to ministry in the Christian church. And so I actually did divinity school first. and then wind up applying to medical school after that. And so I definitely had my own journey in time. And so it was nice to have that experience before going to medical school, getting a different type of degree, being in a whole different culture because it was the humanities. I mean, that really shaped how I even approach medicine to this day.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you chose your own path and that you integrated your faith and a degree in religious studies into your pursuit of a medical career. So, you know, that really speaks to, I get a lot of questions about, do I have to major in the sciences or do I have to go to medical school right away? And, you know, to your point, the answer is no. And I tell people similarly, you know, get your pre-med requirements in, make sure you do well in those, right? And then you can kind of take advantage of what other things you're interested in too. And so it's kind of that season. So if you had to share three tips with people who are applying to medical school, since we're talking about kind of your college years, what would you say to those individuals?
Well, I know there's so many different tips out there. So to pick just a few, one would be to make sure that you practice interviewing with someone. I was fortunate where our pre-medical office offered mock interviews. And, you know, there's often these things that are offered, take advantage of them.
Yes.
It's already covered in your tuition and things like that. And so I remember I did a mock interview with a graduate student who was actually getting an MD, PhD, and was able to really practice that. And that made me so much more comfortable on the interview trail, because really, once you actually get the interview, that's like most of the battle there. So you have to really be prepared and comfortable with being very conversational and interesting in your conversation. And so that was one major thing that helped me along the way. The second thing is I went to this medical school fair on an annual basis. So I went to school in New England. And so there was this New England medical school fair. And I kept going every year. And what I learned about the time I was about to apply was that if you go early, if you volunteer to set up, or, you know, this helped because my school was actually sponsoring it. But if you go early, there's less people there. And I remember having a conversation with the dean of admissions at Duke Medical School, Dean Armstrong, the wonderful, the late Dean Armstrong. And it was this conversation where, you know, there really wasn't a lot of other people there. And we were able, I was able to just tell her my story. And I really felt like that perhaps helped me get into Duke Medical School. And so really taking advantage of those opportunities. Number three, when you write your personal statement, you want to have three people read it. And of those three people, two should be in the medical profession, especially those who are, the closer they are to the academic medicine process, the better. But at minimum, you know, two physicians. And then the third, someone you know, and this could be someone in your writing department at your school, someone who is a well-equipped writer. And this is when you don't need a science person. Like, you need a major humanities writer, because that's what is going to help make sure that the flow and the artistry of your personal statement is at its best, that it can be, but still in your voice.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything you said, from preparing for the interviews, and you even alluded to it. By the time you get that interview, it's because you've met the requirements and the school wants to know who you are and what you're about. And are you enthusiastic? Are you excited to be at their school? Or are you just kind of going through a checkbox, a checklist, right? They can tell. You can tell those things when you interview with people. So I love that. And shout out and rest in peace to Dr. Armstrong, a phenomenal person, dean, just such a huge influence on so many, including myself. And I know you as well. We love her dearly. And being early, I love that. I feel like so many people don't really take advantage of that, being early to opportunities. They may still show up, but they don't show up early. So I love that advice. Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned that you know, it's important to prepare and be ready. And we know med school was the next level to undergrad. So, you know, we both went to Duke Med. We know how much of a challenge it was. But, you know, tell us a little bit more about navigating that journey. And then did you know you wanted to do internal medicine already? Or how did you kind of arrive at that point of decision as well?
So to start with your first question about navigating medical school, I look back, how did I do that? You know, often, this is why it's in hindsight. I think the couple of things, I feel like I formed a small study group early on. And to this day, I still text message with these two other individuals. And I mean, we hung out a lot, mainly through studying. And I feel like that was what helped me go, helped me keep going, because there was always people to study with. And so you didn't feel like you were by yourself. And I think that was a lot of moral support to get through the experience. Outside of that, I think just learning how to not wait to the last minute to study and making sure that I was doing a maintenance, like every day, trying to do a little bit. And that's what really helped me do well. And then that's really for like the first part of medical school. When we talk about rotations, this I also realized probably towards the second half of our first clinical year, or maybe like the last two thirds, where as a medical student, you know, in reality, they're looking for how confident do you sound when you present patients. And in reality, they're not expecting you to have the knowledge base or the knowledge foundation of an attending or resident. And so I remember when I got to residency and I had to actually grade medical students at that point, I realized as long as people did what they were supposed to do and were confident with their plan based off of the knowledge level that they had, that was really most of it. And once I realized that, it was a lot easier to get through the rotations.
Yeah. You bring up such a good point, because I think we all psych ourselves out so much because it's such a new environment. And, you know, good, bad, and different people are watching all these TV shows, and that really doesn't help when you, I'd be interested to know how people think about Chicago Med as a show. But people are kind of almost romanticizing or being fearful of the wrong things. And, you know, to your point, just having the understanding that we don't expect you to know everything as a medical student, but we do expect you to go read and learn about your patient and then create a plan that seems reasonable based on your knowledge base and what you learned. I love that advice. Are you interested in taking a deeper dive with Black Med Connect? Then join our Black Med Connector newsletter. Each week, you'll hear more about our guests and go behind the scenes to get a deeper dive into their careers. You will get the professional productivity word of the week, and you'll get to see and learn more about amazing physicians doing wonderful things in entrepreneurship and innovation. So head on over to bmedconnect.com/podcast and join the Black Med Connector newsletter. Back to the episode. So you're on your rotations. What swayed you towards internal medicine?
So for me, it was definitely a journey getting there. And you have to realize that as a medical student, we're not even exposed to most specialties anyway. So it's kind of, it can be kind of challenging to really figure out what you want to do. And sometimes you kind of get there by happenstance. I would say when I did my first rotation of the first clinical year, the first half was amazing. I was like, okay, yeah, this is it. The second half was horrible. Horrible. I was like, I am not doing this. But, you know, I realized what it was a change in the team I was working with. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I definitely recommend is to not let human beings in that specialty really shape your full experience. Because first of all, like that same specialty somewhere else could have awesome people and vice versa. and so you really have to look at, well, what was my day to day? And so for me, despite that experience, I realized I still wanted to be able to take care of adults, both genders. I wanted to be able to speak to the health of a wider community. And so I decided to go with internal medicine. And when I came back, see, this is why you can't give up. Even though the first half went well, my, you know, first rotation, the second half went bad. When I came back for my sub-internship in fourth year, it was great. I had a great team. You know, I had stellar reviews. And it also just shows you that you can't let just a few people, unfortunately, really deter and determine what specialty you choose. So I went on ahead and chose that because I wanted to still have a general approach to medicine. But even if I wind up going into a subspecialty, it was going to be something underneath that. And so that's why I chose internal medicine.
I love that. I love that. And oh, people can really,
yes,
again, and you don't know, right? You assume it speaks to the culture of medicine, which some of our audience may or may not understand or know about. It's different type of people do different specialties. And if you just happen to be on a team where you don't gel, it can really taint your whole experience with the whole specialty, you know? I'm glad you were able to jump back in there and I'm glad the team that you came back to also seems like a great team to kind of keep you motivated to move in that direction. And so, you know, we'll fast forward a little bit, you know, match day has passed and intern year hits and boom, now you're an intern. How did that go? And especially right, like during this time of year, again, our interns are transitioning here soon. And so, what was it like for you as an intern and getting started in your residency program?
So I would say intern year was not easy. And I was fortunate where the challenge wasn't the people. I was very fortunate where, you know, even to this day, I'm still in touch with my residency. Some of the residents wind up being, you know, in my wedding. I'm the primary care doctor for some of my residents' parents, you know. Yeah. And so it was a great experience. I think, you know, everybody's program is different. I went to Johns Hopkins for internal medicine. It's very top heavy. Well, I guess maybe bottom heavy. Whereas, you know, as an intern, you have a lot of responsibility. And so I think the learning curve was really high. And so I was really stressed with that. But to balance that out, what helped me get through that intern year was I made sure that I stayed close to my support system. And what I mean by support system, I'm talking about the people who mean a lot to you before you even get to where you're getting. And so there were times where when I had, you know, weekends off, I flew to spend time with my support system. And when I did have time off, you know, between family members, close friends, they would visit me. And I just remember how sometimes, you know, I had a parent who would stay with me for a week. You know, there was a lot of time there. So I think that really helped me because it was also this other part of my life. And it reminded myself about the other parts of me outside of being an intern at the time. The other piece to help with intern year is that's the best time to start building frameworks. What is your framework, you know, for the most common chief complaints that you see in your specialty? Really, and so for internal medicine, for example, it's like shortness of breath. And so that was a time where I really spent time figuring out, well, what are all the possible causes of shortness of breath? How do I figure out what is more likely? What do I need to test? And that helped because in reality, even when you become a full attending physician, you're still going to come across some issues where you're like, what is this? It's not your bread and butter. And so then you go back to the framework and that's how you wind up tackling these really complex patients. And I really focused on learning that intern year.
I love that, especially because it's like you said, it's so many diagnoses, but if you can put them in big buckets and start to kind of have a sense of almost pattern recognition off the symptoms, it really does get you far. It really, really does get you far. And I love what you said about your support system too. And especially for residents, whether you're incoming or transitioning soon, it's just so important to figure out outside of the hospital and outside of the patient care responsibilities, how are you going to stay sane and what are you going to do in the time that you do have? And I love that your family and friends came to support you when you were in the midst of that time, because it's very intense. It's very time intensive. It's a good thing to be on the side of it now, right? As a, yes, as an early attending, right? That feels much better. I must admit.
Much better. And there were even, you know, there are a lot of people who will choose their residency site because they have family there. And so I, you know, and that's, if that's what you need, then go for it.
Exactly. Go for it. Go for it. And so just curious, during residency, how did you, were you able to, and can you kind of share with the audience, how were you able to still integrate your ministry, your degree in ministry? And, you know, for both of us, our faith is very important. How did you see that kind of showing up on your, in the day-to-day aspect of what you were doing in residency and even now?
So in residency, yeah, that's where it began, I think, to really come together. So in residency, I actually began to be invited to certain denominational conferences to provide workshops on health and wellness. And so even then, it was interesting because I'm also ordained in my denomination. So I'm classified as clergy. And it was interesting to be in that space. And despite my resident status, I was an authority on it. So even that started to strengthen and build my voice as a wellness expert and a wellness advocate. Other parts of it, in terms of how it comes together, and I'm still, you know, looking at how it comes together today, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. I did an internship when I was in divinity school as a chaplain. And so we learned about how to sit down and listen to people. We learned about this concept called ministry of presence, which was important because as a chaplain, you know, there are many moments you're called into the hospital and there are things that are going on that are so terrible that there really aren't words that are worth saying. So it's really your presence that makes the moment actually useful for you to be there. And so taking that ministry of presence and how I come into the room, how I interact with the patient, that itself is part of the therapeutic encounter. That's a fancy word. But like that, basically, like part of your care is not just what medication or what referrals you put in or what you want to tell the patient to do. Part of your actual therapy is also, does that patient feel like they're being listened to? Do they feel like they're being respected? Do they feel that you're treating them as a whole person? And so that really built for me when I was in residency. And I would say for now that I'm an assistant pastor at a church in Chicago, St. James Amy, Chicago, and a physician, I do a lot more speaking engagements. Whether speaking at local colleges, universities, whether in the religious studies departments or the divinity schools, that's part of it. But then the other part of it is just continuing to utilize that ministry of presence in my actual visits themselves.
Yeah, I love what you said there, especially because sometimes our stillness and just, like you said, being there really does mean a lot to families. And when we're in the middle of trying to make clinical decisions and in the fast pace of it all, and even when patients may or may not be declining, like there's so many things going through your mind. But I love that that's actually a concept. I haven't heard ministry of presence before, but I appreciate you sharing that. And I want to send a special thank you to all of our chaplains throughout the country, because their work is, they're so important and they're so, so helpful to families. And so it's just very interesting that you got to do that. And I'm sure that impacted, you know, like you said, how you see patients even now, because it's such a human experience that we're going through. Mm-hmm. And I remember sometimes thinking, you know, we're in the hospital every day, every night before a family like this. It might be the first time in years, or it's, you know, their mother, their father, or for me, their child. And it's such a overwhelming place. So, you know, our chaplains are such a critical aspect of our healthcare team that we don't say thank you to. So thank you for sharing that. We hope you enjoyed part one of our episode with Dr. Shakira Sanchez Collins. We had an amazing discussion on her journey to medicine, how she began by shadowing, how she chose religious studies as her major in college, and how you don't necessarily have to major in the sciences to go on to pursue medical school. We talked a little bit about her journey, and next week we'll continue along her journey and hear more about how she navigates and uses her major as a religious studies major in college and now as a clergy member and assistant pastor to continue to bridge that gap and bridge the community more into healthcare and what she does on a daily basis as a practicing physician. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or watch us on YouTube and give us a thumbs up. Once again, this is Dr. Jasmine Weiss, and always remember to dream without limits. Bye.